Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. While attending Vin Expo earlier this year, I had the opportunity to attend Decanters Wines of New Zealand Masterclass. I was happy to get in since the event that was actually the last tasting on the final day of the exhibit sold out quickly. It was hosted by Ellen McCoy, the wine award-winning journalist and author. She is a wine and spirits columnist for Bloomberg News and a columnist for Decanter Magazine. If you are familiar or remember Cloudy Bay Sauvignon Blanc, which was the wine that started the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc craze, well, things have really changed since then. Although that wine did wake up people's taste buds and allowed those ABC people to taste a different type of wine, the quality of New Zealand wines has come a long way. So join me as I listen to Ellen McCoy explain what is so wonderful of New Zealand wines. Sláinte.
Hey. Just wanted to welcome everyone on behalf of Decanter. Thank you for coming. I know it is the last seminar of the last day, so we appreciate you being here. My name is Dana Shapiro. I'm the North American consultant for Decanter. So today we're going to be tasting New Zealand winners from the Decanter World Wine Awards. The Decanter World Wine Awards is the largest and most influential global wine competition. We are actually just closing our 2019 World Wine Awards this week. And there is also a Decanter Asia World Wine Awards as well that focuses on how those wines are received in the Asian market. You will see on your seat, you should have all the detailed information with technical notes on all the wines. You will also have this little flyer, which is a discount offer for print publication Decanter, and then also Decanter Premium, which is online access to Decanter that also includes exclusive content and up to 1,000 wine reviews per month. So please take advantage of that if you'd like to. Now, I would like to introduce you to Ellen McCoy. Ellen is an award-winning journalist and author, and is the wine and spirits columnist for Bloomberg News and also writes for Decanter. And stay tuned for a book coming out soon on Sonoma. So without further ado.
Thanks very much, Dana. Hi, everybody, and thank you for persevering at the end of the day. And your taste buds, I promise you, will be perked up. So thanks for being here. So first of all, I want to say a few things about the Decanter World Wine Awards and the whole idea of how we got these wines, where these wines came from. First of all, nearly 17,000 wines were judged in the 2018 competition. And of those, 475 were from New Zealand. And of those, about 350 actually won awards. So I think that tells you something about the quality level of New Zealand wines. I'm very excited about New Zealand wine. I've been there four times over the past, 12 or 13 years. I was just there last year for 3 weeks, going to various regions around the country and tasting a lot of wine. And so today we're going to taste 8 wines that come from 5 of New Zealand's 11 main wine regions from 5 different varieties. So you could think of this as a kind of, I don't know, mini tour of what's happening in New Zealand right now. So if you look up, you'll be able to see the map. And I'm going to say a few words about New Zealand before we start actually tasting. And since it's the end of the day, you know, maybe you don't feel as obliged as I do as a professional to spit every mouthful. I'm not going to tell anyone if I see someone actually swallowing. So here's the thing about New Zealand. The Kickstarter, the reason we even started knowing about New Zealand was not because they just planted vines yesterday. They actually planted vines in the 19th century. And when Decanter was founded in 1975, however, the wine world looked very different, as we all know. But also, New Zealand was like not even on the radar of people. That happened because of one wine, a Sauvignon Blanc from Cloudy Bay. And that winery, founded in 1985, suddenly, when the first Cloudy Bay Sauvignon Blanc was released, it somehow managed to go all over the world, and people are like astounded. This was like a new style of Sauvignon Blanc, the style that everybody sort of still thinks of as New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, that grassy, in-your-face, anti-Chardonnay, you know, zing, 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 zing. You know, wake up your taste buds. So that really, suddenly people said, wow, New Zealand. And I think that how many people here have been to New Zealand? So you know how absolutely, phenomenally beautiful it is. And how full of surprises. I think that what you need to think about, really, is that the surprises start with the country itself. And if you're looking at the map, if you don't know, there are two islands, a North Island and a South Island. And I think you can, it's big enough that you can see where various regions are, but I'll be reiterating that. So the surprises in New Zealand start really with the country itself. And it's a place, I think, and you know, people who have been there, it's a place that you actually feel like the earth is changing right beneath your feet. There are these incredible gorges with, you know, water that's so clear. It looks like, I don't know, you could just start drinking it. And the mountains seem very raw, as though they were just pushed up by an earthquake 2 weeks ago. You feel that force of nature, and the vines have become part of that force of nature, so that they're hugging the slopes of these steep peaks, and they're sitting above these pristine lakes, and they're next to these rocky gorges. And everywhere the sky, and you'll see in some of the photos as we go along, it seems so clear with these gorgeous, gorgeous clouds. It feels like the wind has come from far away and just cleaned everything up. So I think that when we think about New Zealand, it sort of is very interesting how when people are asked three words for New Zealand wine, it's clean, green, Sauvignon Blanc. And the clean and green is also reflected in a surprising sustainability program, which just about every winery in New Zealand is a part of. So wine tourism is booming, wineries are adding restaurants, and here's a startling fact. by 2021, New Zealand is predicted to be the number four wine exporting region to the U.S., just behind France, Italy, and I forgot the third one. So you think to yourself, how is this possible for a country that makes barely 1% of the world's wines? That seems really, does that seem surprising to you? I mean, it sure does to me. And exports are growing by 24% a year. And that has been growing for 23 years without a break. So more New Zealand wine is in your future. So let's talk about Sauvignon Blanc. One of the big changes I see is that Sauvignon Blanc is not just one thing anymore. There's more than that zingy, grassy taste. And the second big change is that it isn't just Sauvignon Blanc anymore. The next big thing is New Zealand Pinot Noir, and there are a lot of other grape varieties that are planted too. And as I said, there are 11 main regions, and on both the North Island and the South Island, and most of them are on the eastern side of New Zealand, in both the North and South Islands. This is because you see the mountains that are running down the center of both islands. Okay, the wind comes across and it stops at those mountains. And that's why just about all the wine regions are on the other side of it. They are protected. And now there are about 700 wineries in New Zealand, and the vast majority of them are small, you know, sort of boutique-y things, sort of boutique-y recent startups, etc. And all the wineries are close to the ocean, except down in central Otago, which you can see is in the South Island, sort of in the middle. It's marked on the map. Heat waves are rare, though I have to say, when I was there in last January in central Otago, there was a major heat wave, which I was not expecting. The temperatures were about 90 degrees. And I discovered that no one in central Otago at any hotel has air conditioning. Everyone was kind of dying. They aren't used to that. The other thing you notice, however, about New Zealand is the light. There's high sunshine. The light is just astonishing. It seems clearer and purer than elsewhere. The first time I went, I came back and said to my husband, I think we need to move to New Zealand. He was not enthused, but then he hadn't been there. So let's start out by tasting the first wine, because we have eight of them, and we're starting with Sauvignon Blanc just as a kind of reference point. And we're tasting two Sauvignon Blancs. And the reason, here, this is the first one. It's from a region called Wairarapa. This is the problem New Zealand has. No one really knows how to pronounce the Maori names some of these regions. Martinborough is actually a sub-region of this bigger region. And this wine is the Craggy Range, Tamuna Road Vineyard Sauvignon Blanc. Yes, there is a Tamuna Road. So let me just say a few things about Sauvignon Blanc in New Zealand. I mean, even as I'm saying, hey, the new thing is all these other grapes. Yes, but 72% of all New Zealand wine is Sauvignon Blanc. So these other grapes have a long way to go. The plantings keep growing. They're double what they were only 12 years ago in 2007. And as I mentioned before, there's this punchy style. How many people actually like Sauvignon Blanc? Oh, good, good. This is a good group. Do you like New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc? Okay. Some people don't seem to like it all that well. So we'll see if you like either of these examples. Because the downside of success has been the fact that a lot of Sauvignon Blanc is out there. It costs like $9 or $10. It is what you pour at a big party. No one absolutely hates it. It's fairly good quality for a $9 or $10 wine, but you can barely tell the difference. So I'm hoping that as you taste these wines, you'll think that they do have some distinctive character to it. So let's taste first the Craggy Range, and then you can tell me whether you like it or not. So how many people like this wine? Okay, pretty good, pretty good. Well, I like this wine too. I think it's got a lot of freshness. It's got some nice sort of stone fruit aromas. And it's zippy, but it has this length to it. And it seems to have more body and less of that acidity that's just like waking you up and making you feel like, you know, you've just been hit with lightning or something. So I want to tell you one funny thing about this this winery, Craggy Range, and their Sauvignon Blanc. The fact is, about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, there was a blind tasting at Per Se restaurant in New York of a whole bunch of Sauvignon Blancs from New Zealand. And it was put on by Craggy Range, and I thought they were pretty brave to do this. Because when we all rated I guess it was 11 or 12 Sauvignon Blancs, Craggy Range came in dead last. And so, but they weren't upset at all because they cleared away all the glasses. They brought out a whole new set of glasses and a different pouring order, and they gave us some food. And with food, Craggy Range came out as the number one Sauvignon Blanc in this tasting. And it really surprised everybody at this tasting. We were all stunned by the fact that it could seem so different when you had it with food. And as the winemaker at the time said, I don't make wine to stand out in a tasting, I make it to go with food. And that was a perfect example. And I think this wine is showing you that kind of character. So I just want to say a few things about this wine. And if anybody, please, if you have a question in the middle of it, put up your hand. You know, I'm happy to answer questions. So, first of all, Tamuna Road is an actual road. And Tamuna means secret place in Maori. It's just a few miles from the actual town of Martinborough. And Martinborough, which I'll talk about a little bit more later, but it sort of reminds me a lot of Sonoma's Healdsburg, if you've been to visit Healdsburg in Sonoma. And the winery, Craggy Range, is in two different places. It's in Martinborough, and it's also in Hawke's Bay. It was founded in 1997 by an Australian family called the Peabodys, who still own it. And this vineyard in Martinborough is actually now huge. They bought a huge piece of land. It grows now Pinot Noir as well as Sauvignon Blanc. The Sauvignon Blanc grows on stone terraces that are left from a huge river that flowed through there. And so it's very rocky. The soil is very rocky. And really, Martinborough is a very compact region. And if you look, I can go back to the map, but if you can just imagine the map in your mind, and you think of the North Island and the very southeast tip of that island across the straits from Marlborough, that is where Martinborough is. And it really has a different kind of character. It's very cool, and it's even in Timuna Road is cooler than Martinborough itself, and it's harvested about a week later. Now, this is fermented, and I'm bringing this up because we're going to compare it to the next Sauvignon Blanc, which is made in a different way. So this one is fermented in three different ways: in stainless, in huge oak couves, French oak couves, and also in French barriques. And so it's then aged in French barriques for 4 months, and only a tiny percentage, of course, is new oak. So think about that when you taste number two, which we can taste right now, and tell me if you see a real difference in number two. Let's taste it. So how many people like this one? Okay, we have a lot of people who like it, some who haven't raised their hand. Do you taste the difference in this one from the previous one? Okay, anybody want to throw out a word or two about what this one tastes like? Anybody? Well, it's more grassy, isn't it? And more it's acid. More, it has more zing. It also has a lot more acidity, actually, than the previous wine. And I really, it's really intense. It has this immense sort of passion fruit, guava, citrus. Guava. It's just all up front on your palate. But this is what, when they say fruit driven, this is what people are talking about. So if you look up at the map that I've just put up on the screen, you're looking at Marlborough and the valleys that are in the Marlborough region, which is at the top of the South Island. This region is the epicenter of Sauvignon Blanc in New Zealand. It's, you know, I mean, everywhere you look, there are Sauvignon Blanc vines. Everybody is growing Sauvignon Blanc. Only recently have people discovered, hey, you know, the Riesling from here is pretty good, the Pinot is pretty good, because it became so identified with the Cloudy Bay style that you're tasting so much in this second wine. And this is going to really, I mean, to give you a figure that will make you think about how much Sauvignon Blanc there is here. There are 47,000 acres of Sauvignon Blanc in Marlborough. That's more than 20 times more than any other region in New Zealand. So they are banking on it. Now, however, I think a lot of producers that I talk to are focusing on sub-regions. That's why I put this map up there, because you can see at the very top, there is something called the Wairu Valley. And then further down, there's one that starts with A, that practically, I've heard now five different pronunciations for this, from Awatere to Awatri. Awatri seems to be the one that New Zealanders say most often, which makes no sense to me. But that, the wine we're tasting is from that valley. It is the smaller, narrower valley, first planted in 1985, and it has a longer ripening period. It's cooler than the Wairu Valley further north. And really, people thought this valley was too cold to grow any kind of grapes. And it was a place for sheep. If you've been to New Zealand, you have seen a lot of sheep. And this is, there were plenty of them back in the day. The land is stonier. The air is drier, it's cooler, it's windier. And there are huge temperature swings which give wines a really strong personality. And deep rocky soil, and about this particular winery has about 196 acres. To get this freshness, this zing, they even harvest at night in an already cool region. And I'm gonna just put the wine up. It's fermented only in stainless steel, and it's cold fermented, which means they're keeping it as cold as possible to keep all that fruit in the wine. This actually, you probably wouldn't guess it, but it has a teeny bit of residual sugar in it. Only a tiny bit, like 4 grams, but the acidity is so high that it actually, I think, is a good thing, because it balances that acidity and makes it actually pleasant and easier to drink. So we're gonna stay in Marlborough for the third wine. And why don't we turn to that now? It's the Spy Valley Riesling. So we're now going on to a different variety. I think Riesling, I'm so glad to have Riesling in this tasting, because I actually really like New Zealand Rieslings. And I think that a lot of people just don't associate Riesling. How many Riesling lovers do we actually have? Oh, this is a very, very, I knew you were an intelligent group. And so do people like this as an expression of Riesling? It's not like a German Riesling. It's not like an American Riesling. Do people like it? Yes or no? The man in the red sweater does not like it. Okay, who else does not like it? Okay, several people don't like it. Maybe we should ask someone why they don't like it. You like German Rieslings. Well, you know, it's possible to become an and person, which is German and, you know, New Zealand Riesling. And does anybody else, do you want to say what you...
Well, from my experience, Austrian Riesling is a little bit less acidic in a way, but I think this Riesling is very good to eat with something.
Okay, you need to eat something with it.
Exactly.
Actually, I totally agree with that. And I think that you do have the acidity is really, really, really powerful in this wine. And I think if you had something alongside of it, some scallops,
some oysters,
razor clams
exactly.
from New Zealand that you would find that acidity to be like a squeeze of lemon. So let me just say a few words about Riesling. This, by the way, is from a single vineyard, and there it is. That's the vineyard this Riesling is from. So here's the thing. 1.4% of New Zealand's wine production is Riesling. This is not a big number here. But I think it still remains the fourth most planted white varietal in New Zealand. And it thrives really in the bright days and cool nights of Marlborough, and has those lemony, citrusy flavors. This is from a spot that's sort of midway between those two valleys that you saw on the map. And the winery was founded in the 1990s by the Johnson family, and that vineyard you're looking at is called the Johnson Vineyard. They are actually the largest grower of Gewürztraminer in all of New Zealand. And I actually had wanted to have their Gewürztraminer, but it was all sold out and impossible to obtain. And they also make 6 Sauvignon Blancs. So let me tell you about how they made this, because it's really interesting. They picked 7 different times. So that's people going through the vineyard 7 different times to pick these grapes. It's all in stainless, but it sits on the leaves for quite a while, which gives it, I think, some weight, more weight than you might expect. And it does have a tiny bit of residual sugar in it, which I think if it didn't have that, the tartness of it would be... We have an open mouth over here. She's horrified. So let's... But I don't want to linger too much because we have a lot of wines to taste.
Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year. Your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank.
And so let's move on to number 4, which is the Chardonnay. And the reason it's called Vidal El Legado Legacy Range Chardonnay, this is a huge mouthful. It's a little confusing. They can't use the name Vidal or Vidal Estate in the U.S. In the rest of the world, it's Vidal Estate. Here in the U.S., it's El Legado. It's a trademark issue But that's why there are the two names are up there. So let's just taste this and see what people think of Chardonnay from New Zealand. So are people liking this? Yep. Yep. Yes. Why are they calling it Eldorado? You know, this is a really good question, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm sorry. In fact, I had known it in New Zealand as Vidal Estate, and I was really surprised when I found out that the one we were, that I, when I found out that it had a different name in the U.S., I had no idea because I tasted it in New Zealand where it's called Vidal Estate. And I don't actually know where they got the name. But this is for a good question, and I am embarrassed I don't know the answer. So, you taste the concentration. The interesting thing about this wine to me is that it has a certain lightness at the same time it has concentration. It has citrus, but it also has some kind of nutty notes in it, and it has a kind of flinty character, but it's not like, you know, cutting edge like a Chablis. It's kind of it's an interesting mixture to me, and it has that brightness that you seem to always get in white wines from New Zealand. So Chardonnay is grown in every single region, wine region in New Zealand. But still, it's only about 7% of New Zealand's wine. Hawke's Bay, I don't know, I won't go back, but in the North Island, you know where Martinborough was. Above that, near right around Napier, the most perfect Art Deco city in the world, this is true, is Hawke's Bay. And it's got a warmer climate. It's got a very long growing season. The climate is sort of midway between Burgundy and Bordeaux, and it has a lot of different kinds of soil. So you can get a lot of different expressions of Chardonnay there. Chardonnay is the flagship white in Hawke's Bay. There's a wide range of styles. Vines were actually planted in the mid-19th century, but really this region is known for Cabernet and Merlot. This particular wine was harvested early. They do whole cluster pressing. This is what the Chardonnay grapes look like, and this is what the vineyard looks like. They do barrel fermentation, but I don't think it seems overdone, even though 43% of the barriques are new. And so this also has very high acidity. It has almost as high acidity as this second Sauvignon Blanc. So let's move on to the next big thing, which is Pinot Noir. And we're looking at a map right here of the area where the first wine comes from, central Otago. And you can see how mountainous it looked. Okay, so Pinot Noir, the next big thing from New Zealand. You know, when I was there, I sampled examples of Pinot from five different regions, and they were all quite different. We're tasting from two regions, from central Otago and then from Martinborough, and both of them have a certain amount of lush fruit, but they're quite different, and they have a lot more sophistication than Pinots in New Zealand had even, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. And how did Pinot get to New Zealand? What was the problem? They had very bad clones, because for those who have gone to New Zealand, you know, if you have any mud on your shoe, they make you stand in a little pail of water because they don't want any bugs that you're bringing in to actually come in to New Zealand. And these, what really changed, people think, is when a whole bunch of you know, cuttings were smuggled in, supposedly from Domaine de la Romanée Conti in Burgundy, to New Zealand in the boots of a rugby player. This is actually a true story. I thought it was completely nuts. But he also happened upon a very, very nice customs official who, instead of just throwing these out, said, okay, let's send them to the university into quarantine so that they can be tested out. All right, so why don't you go ahead and taste the first two wines against one another, and then we'll talk about the two wines, we'll talk about the differences between these two regions. So how many people here really, really like Pinot Noir? Yes, everyone. I mean, who doesn't like Pinot Noir? How many people are convinced that it's possible to get really interesting Pinot Noir that didn't come from Burgundy? Oh, see, you're already enlightened. So I think that from my perspective, these are two quite different Pinot Noirs, but they're both really interesting examples. As you can see from the slide that's up now, the first wine, the Serres wine, the composition Pinot Noir from Central Otago, got one Best in Show for Decanter's World Wine Awards in 2018. And how many people like this wine? Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think this is a really delicious wine. I mean, it's got sort of aromas of berries and spice, and it actually, I pick up a whole thing of wild roses in it that to me is just really compelling. And the flavors have that kind of berry-ish, lots of energy, and these super, super fine tannins. And this is coming out of a dramatic landscape that is, you know, gorgeous, Rocky Mountains, and a very short history of growing Pinot Noir. And keep in mind, this is where bungee jumping was invented. I don't know whether they had drunk a lot of Pinot Noir before doing that. I have never done it. I have no intention of ever doing it. But you should all go and do it. So what I see happening here in Central Otago is that when I was first there, the Pinots were sort of like attractive teenagers. And now they really are sort of like teenagers who turned into kind of film stars. You know, I mean, they've got a lot more finesse. And this, you can almost taste the whole beauty of the region when you sip the wine. But here's what the secrets are down there. I'm going to show you some photos of the landscape here, so you get a sense of the fact that this inlet valley, for example, the vineyards are right in this valley that you're looking at on the screen. So the secrets are that there are massive amounts of ultraviolet radiation in Central Otago, 11% more than in the equivalent latitude in the Northern Hemisphere. And there are also these crazy sort of diurnal shifts from, it can be 80 degrees in the day and it can have frost at night. So that's a huge range, and that sort of tends to really affect the quality of the wines. It's very mountainous, and this now, just as in Marlborough, people are looking to regions. They're looking to smaller areas within the bigger Central Otago region. This is from Bannockburn, the warmest area, and it's really been sort of made slightly famous by the fact that actor Sam Neill has a vineyard there, and called Two Paddocks. And they're making really good wine. They are not celebrity, you know, the sort of boring celebrity wines. 3/4 of all the vineyards in central Otago are planted to Pinot Noir. And they have a very short season. It's hot days, cool nights. And this Serra's wines, their first wines were only in 2005. And it's a family from South Africa, a lot of South Africans in New Zealand. And the grapes come from 2 vineyards. And if you look here, there's a terrace. You can't really see it in this photo, but there are vines literally growing on the hillsides of this inlet. 2015 was a cool vintage, and I think you got a beautiful sort of perfume out of it, beautiful aromas from that cool vintage, which, you know, makes cool vintages tend to produce more lovely aromas. This is native yeast fermentation. It's 20% new oak, and only 417 cases of this were made, so we're kind of lucky to be tasting it. And now I want to talk about the Te Kairanga, and it's actually Kairanga, like Wairanga. John Martin Pinot Noir Martinborough from Wairarapa. This is not available in the USA, sadly. And I'm showing a map now of the town of Martinborough. If you can see, if you look far to the right, a big block that says Te Kairanga. And you can see if you look at everything that's in sort of purple are vineyards, and the brown is the town, the little town with a little square in the center. This is where you see people bicycling from tasting room to tasting room. Here's the wine we just tasted, and here is their little tasting room, a 130-year-old cottage that belonged to the founder of Martinborough. Now, I find this to be a very different Pinot Noir. Do people agree? Yes? Yeah. It has a kind of complexity and layered character that the first one doesn't have. It has more earthiness to it, to me, more sort of a rich, dark fruit, and then very, very silky tannins. It's this area, which accounts for about 2% of New Zealand's wine production, is really another one known for Pinot Noir. Half the wines here are from Pinot Noir. And it was identified even as far back as the 1970s as being very similar to Burgundy. So this again has 12 months in French oak, about 25% of it new, and the winery, which is owned by an American, who also owns wineries in California, also makes Riesling, Pinot Gris, Sauvignon Blanc, and Chardonnay. But Pinot Noir is what they have always been noted for. So now we're gonna move on to Cabernet-based wine from Hawke's Bay, which again, you remember the Chardonnay that we tasted was from Hawke's Bay on the North Island. The largest percent of Cabernet and Merlot in New Zealand is planted in Hawke's Bay. So why don't we taste that? If I'm rushing a little, it's because I noticed that we started 15 minutes late and I'm trying to catch up a little bit. So let's taste. So this is a very different kind of wine. It's actually a blend of 42% Cabernet Sauvignon and 23% Merlot and 31% a Cabernet Franc. And, you know, I find this has a lot of richness to it. It has a lot of elegance to it. It's got that kind of, it's got a lot of fruit in comparison with some Cabernets that you might find from Bordeaux, for example. It has a lot of structure to it. How many people like this wine? Not a lot of people like it. I think it's really delicious. So you might be asking yourself, what is Gimlet Gravels? Gimlet Gravels, it has a very short history. It's a district within Hawke's Bay that for years was like the least productive land in Hawke's Bay. For a while, there was a drag strip there. For a while, there were warehouses. A concrete company bought some land there so that they could take out the gravel. And a few enterprising wineries planted some grapes, and the results were so good that these wines started winning awards. And so the wineries and winemakers went to court to get this piece of land classified as a wine growing area that couldn't be used for other things. In other words, the highest, best purpose was to grow grapes on this land. So it took them 10 years. I have seen a book this fat with all the various cases that were taken to court, on and on and on. I think the guy who was in charge of the efforts really wanted me to see how thick this book of all these pieces of paper was. So now this area is about just under 2,000 acres. And this particular winery was founded in 1993, and their first wines were 1998. This is what formed the Gravels, a huge, sort of river that deposited gravel that is so deep, you can literally dig down in this gravel and you just keep going and going and going and going. This is one of the reasons why these grapes do so well there, but Syrah also does really well. Now, the Trinity Hill, this has got, typical Cabernet kind of winemaking, pump overs, 4 weeks maceration, aging in French oak, 35% of it new for 16 months. It's a pretty typical regime, but I think it's got this beautiful smoothness to it, and also that kind of brightness you seem to get over and over again in New Zealand. So, all right, now we're going to go to the very last wine, and this, by the way, is the Trinity Hill winery, which is, I think, quite striking. But now we're going to a sweet wine. This is the 2016 Seafried Winemakers Collection Sweet Agnes Riesling from another region called Nelson. And this is New Zealand's most awarded dessert wine. It's gotten awards from just about everyone, including, of course, a platinum award from the 2018 Decanter World Wine Awards, As well as in the past, it's also been best of show. So let's taste it. I hope you like this because I think it's absolutely fantastic. Yes?
Yes, yes.
I hope there's nobody here that doesn't like sweet wines because really, come on, people, they're great values. Look at the price up there on this wine. Look at the price. Oh, it is, yes, $23. All right, yes, it's for a half bottle. But still, this is, I think this is a totally killer wine. Yes. You'll drink it? You'll drink it, but you don't like it? You don't like sweet wine, but you like this. Okay, good. Okay, so do you get all the mandarin orange peel in this? And it's got these incredible floral aromas. And, you know, it's got this succulence to it, that wonderful taste with this lovely acidity that makes you just say, I absolutely have to have another sip of this wine. Just one, maybe I'll have two. I think it's very sweet. It's very sweet, but it has so much acidity that you're not really aware of how sweet it really is. So Nelson is on the South Island. It's sort of, if you remember where Marlborough is, this is the vineyard. You know, I said there were going to be a lot of skies. Well, here's yet another one. This is the high sunshine capital of New Zealand with 2,400 hours of sun per year. It's very sheltered, coastal. Germans planted the first vines, and to the north is the Tasman Sea. The beautiful thing about Nelson, which is a big, you know, sort of tourism place, is that it's right next to these long, long beaches that run along the top of the South Island to the west, to the west, and it's really that's where the Abel Tasman track is. I've done that myself. You can hike along the beach for mile after mile. There are no roads to get to it. So how are they making this wine? Well, first of all, the people who own this are Austrian born. They planted vines in 1973. Their first harvest was 76. And the vineyard is very close to the ocean. It's only about 7 miles from the coast. It has very warm days and cool nights, but a lot of breezes. The grapes for this wine are hand-selected. And they are, when they're shriveled and raisined. You know, you can tell there's no botrytis on this the way there would be in a Sauternes. They go through the vineyard time after time after time, really picking only the grapes that are at the right point of raisining. And to give you an idea, we've been talking about a tiny bit of residual sugar in other grapes of like 3 or 4 grams. Okay, this is 175 grams of sugar. That is really, really sweet. They just pressed this. They fermented it sort of in batches. And they just then eventually blend the various batches and hold it for a while until they're ready to bottle it. It's got really high acidity. Remember I was saying the high acidity, we had like 7.9 acidity in this second Sauvignon Blanc. This is 10.6. So the sugar and the acid is really keeping this from being syrupy and keeping it lively. And just remember, this only has 10.5% alcohol. So you can drink a lot of it. So I want to sort of ask everybody, you know, I want to sort of wrap up there. I hope this has been a good little tour of New Zealand for you. I hope you, I hope you tasted some things that you've never had before.
Thanks for listening to Dracaena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracaenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at DracaenaWines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracaena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracaenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!